and it's about the story of Lazarus. Now, a man named Lazarus was ill. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay ill, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is ill." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This illness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed where he was 2 more days. And then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." "But Rabbi," they said, "a short while ago the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you are going back." Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in the daytime will not stumble, for they see by this world's light. It is when a person walks at night that they stumble, for they have no light." After he had said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up." His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better." Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Then Thomas, also known as Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she replied, "I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world." After she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus has not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house, comforting her, noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days." Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen, with a cloth round his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." Therefore, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done.
Thank you, Christine. I'm going to pray for John as he.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I just need to mention I didn't sleep well last night, so if I stumble over my words, I hope you'll forgive me. 10 days ago, on March the 12th, Juliet Kenny, a sixth form pupil at Queen Elizabeth Grammar School in Faversham in Kent, completed her assessments for her A-level in physical education. Her father has described her as fit, healthy, and strong. But 2 days later, despite admission to hospital, she died from meningitis B. The shock and grief of her family are hard to imagine. 2,000 years ago, in a village called Bethany, Martha and Mary recognized that their beloved brother Lazarus had a serious illness. So they send a message to Jesus. Such is their confidence that Jesus can do and will do the right thing. Their message is not even delivered as a request. They simply tell him, "Lord, the one you love is ill." They refer to Jesus as, they refer to Lazarus as the one you love, suggesting that Jesus was such a close family friend that there was no need to refer to Lazarus by name. But soon after the messenger leaves Bethany, Lazarus dies. I imagine the messenger returning to Bethany, seeing the sisters and confirming that the message was faithfully delivered. And the sisters ask the messenger, "So, what did Jesus say? Is he on his way?" And the messenger gives the painfully confusing reply that Jesus did not appear to be in any hurry to come. So now the sisters face not only the loss of their brother, but the apparent disregard from the one person they had considered worthy of all their trust. I imagine them to be in a very dark place. But almost immediately, Martha and Mary have a house full of visitors. Most people in the village would be repeatedly visiting to share their grief and pay their respects. It seems likely that the family lived in a large house and had a wide social circle, including many who lived in nearby Jerusalem. The unexpected death of a young man would generate more than the usual mourning. The crowd would include those whose grief was genuine, as well as those who came because it was the expected thing to do. There might even have been some who came out of curiosity, perhaps wondering which doctor visited Lazarus, what treatment did they recommend? Would the sisters go and live with their uncle in Jerusalem? Would the big house be put up for sale? So when Jesus reaches Bethany, does he come and join the crowd? No. He waits outside the village. He wants to meet with Mary and Martha in private. When Martha hears that Jesus is near, she goes out to meet him. I imagine her hurrying, and when she reaches Jesus, she blurts out in her pain and confusion, "Lord, If you had been here, my brother would not have died. It sounds like a cry of frustration. If only, if only. But perhaps there is also a hint of criticism of Jesus. An unspoken question. Why weren't you here? Why has it taken you so long to turn up? In verse 37, we read that some of the crowd said, couldn't he who opened the eyes of the blind have kept this man from dying? It's easy to imagine the sisters in their emotional vulnerability being influenced by such thinking. But given what Martha says next, perhaps when Martha says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died, she is declaring her faith in Jesus as a worker of miracles, not only to heal the sick, but even to raise the dead. For she continues, but I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. And it seems that this remarkable declaration of faith opens Martha to receive even more profound truths, in particular about who Jesus is. If these were previously known to her, it seems that she now appreciates them more deeply, so that her focus is no longer on her brother, but on Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. And what about Mary? Why did she not come out to meet Jesus? Is it because someone needs to stay at home to receive the crowd of visitors? Is it because she wants Martha to have a chance to meet Jesus privately while she keeps the visitors with her? Or perhaps she is feeling so confused and hurt by the delay in Jesus's arrival that she cannot face meeting him. But Jesus knows there are things Mary needs to learn from him. So Martha goes to Mary with a message. The teacher is here and is asking for you. Jesus wants Mary to come to him, the teacher. And Mary sets aside her obligations to her visitor and goes to Jesus, just as she is, with her unresolved pain and with her confusion. When she reaches him, the first thing she does is striking. It's not to ask for sympathy or to question Jesus about his delayed arrival. It's simply to fall at his feet in worship. Then Mary also declares, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But for Mary, Jesus has a different lesson. It is at an emotional level. Mary is completely free to weep in the presence of Jesus. And she learns that Jesus is totally engaged with her feelings. The onlookers, seeing Jesus's very real tears, interpreted them as evidence for Jesus's love for Lazarus, but they were mistaken. Jesus knew he was going to raise Lazarus within minutes. His tears were not for Lazarus. They were due to his loving empathy with Mary. And thus she received not answers to her questions or relief from her pain, But what she really needed, the knowledge that Jesus truly loved her. But Jesus is also described as deeply moved in spirit and troubled in verse 33, and deeply moved in verse 38. The Greek word translated as deeply moved in spirit may also be translated as greatly disturbed in spirit, or groaned in the spirit, or sighed heavily, or even angry in his spirit. It's a strong word that was used to describe the snorting of horses. It conveys elements of frustration and indignation. Various reasons have been suggested for Jesus displaying this striking emotion, including his sharing in the grief of those present and his frustration at people's lack of faith. But I prefer a third explanation, one that ties in with the key declaration of Jesus, "I am the resurrection and the life." For Jesus, the situation is not just about Lazarus's death. It's about death itself. From Genesis chapter 3 onwards, death, physical and spiritual, had dominated human existence, causing loss and separation. As it says in Romans chapter 5, verse 12, "Therefore, just as sin entered the world through one man, and death through sin, and in this way death came to all people because all sinned." So Jesus, confronted with death, has an overwhelming sense that this is not how God intended things to be. He feels passionately that it is not supposed to be like this. He feels passionately that something has to be done about this. But Jesus knows that to become the resurrection and the life, he himself has to die and rise again, and so defeat death. As it says in Luke 24, verse 6, "It is necessary that the Son of Man be betrayed into the hands of sinful men, be crucified, and rise on the third day." And we read of the outcome in Paul's encouragement to the church in Corinth, where he contrasts Adam with Jesus. For since death came through a man, the resurrection of the dead also comes through a man. For as in Adam all die, so in Christ all will be made alive. We are approaching Easter, and what we might call the Easter mission of Jesus was to make the impossible possible. Spiritual life for the spiritually dead, and resurrection life for the physically dead. In his gospel, John sets out the raising of Lazarus as a dramatic illustration of this Easter mission. Those who witnessed the raising of Lazarus would have had an awe-inspiring demonstration of the power of Jesus over death. Of course, Lazarus was not at that time given a resurrection body. He was simply reanimated. One day he would physically die again. But for the rest of his life and for his family, there would be a profound certainty that Jesus had the authority to say, "I am the resurrection and the life." They would live as Easter people. What about us? We have the completed Easter story. Are we Easter people? What might that mean for us? Perhaps someone here has been, is, or will be in a situation like Mary was. Let them hear the words of Martha. The teacher is here and is asking for you. We see what it means for Martha and Mary to be Easter people within days of the Lazarus's raising. In the very next chapter, we read how the sisters again provide hospitality for Jesus and an unspecified number of his disciples. But looking back to Luke chapter 10, we read of a previous occasion when they were hosts to Jesus. On that previous occasion, Martha is distracted by the practicalities of being hostess, becoming worried and upset. But on this new occasion of hospitality, Martha serves Jesus. John describes Martha's action with the Greek word diakone, from which we get the word deacon. The only other verse in John's Gospel in which this word is used is in chapter 12, verse 26, where Jesus declares, "My Father will honor the one who serves me." So an Easter person is not somebody who is distracted by Christianity-related activity, but someone who serves Christ. And Mary, well, on the earlier occasion, rather than conforming to the expected female role of assistant hostess, Mary joins the male disciples, listening to Jesus' teaching, for which Jesus commends her. But on this new occasion, she moves beyond knowledge and understanding to a heartfelt devotion. She pours a very expensive perfume on Jesus' feet as an act of lavish worship. So an Easter person is someone who is committed to a journey to know and worship Jesus more and more. Let's have a moment of silence together to respond to God's word.